One way to understand yoga is that it is a means or an effort to find the right poise, the right balance between soul and nature, which are two sides of one reality. In the initial stages of development, as Shobindu reveals to us, the soul is like a slave of nature. It is bound to nature, nature drags it along the serpentine paths of life and it goes. It feeds it with milk which is half poison, half, it's mixed, it's a mixed thing. And yet the soul takes it and grows through it. It grows in strength, it grows in potency. As Shobindu reveals to us that even when nature drags the soul like a slave, still it spurs him to master, to mastery and conquest. It wants the soul to grow to a point where it can master nature. So this growth takes place up to a point, and then the soul and nature are equal partners. And then the third stage where the soul can develop beyond the arc of nature. So these are the three basic possibilities. And yoga starts when soul and nature begin to become an equal partner. In traditional yoga, there is not much emphasis laid on understanding nature in great detail. We see in Shobindu's writings a lot of emphasis on planes and parts of being and each part understood in great detail. Now, in traditional yoga, this is not really emphasized because it's not so important. What is important is the basic constitution of nature. And as the Gita puts it in a very, very simple way, it's a threefold nature, tamasic, rajasic and sattvic. And out of this, we can again divide it into two basic poises of nature or two basic types of movement. One that is tamo-rajasic. Tamo-rajasic nature is very heavy. It is full of dullness, obscurity, with a blind movement in it. There is restless movement in it, impulsive movement, but it's blind and restless, obscure movement. This kind of a nature is not conducive to yoga. This nature, in fact, obstructs the journey of yoga. It is still in the preparatory stages. There is another kind of movement that is possible, and that is rajo-sattvic. This kind of nature is conducive to yoga. Basically, here, a kind of balance, harmony, equilibrium begins to develop, and the kinetic energy of man is subdued by the sense of right and wrong, true and false, dharma and adharma. One decides not just based on the fancies and caprices and impulses of the vital, but on the basis of a higher thought. So this kind of a nature helps the journey of the soul. Now, this is all that is required as far as the traditional yoga is concerned. Nature should be light, it should not obstruct the path, and for that there are certain simple prescriptions and prescriptions which include diet, sleep, certain actions, certain movements, for instance, the shad ripus, kam, krodh, lobh, moh, etc. are known to obstruct because they make the consciousness dull and heavy. Essence is, whatever makes the consciousness dull and heavy does not help the journey of yoga. And this is very simple to understand or experience, that when we are tired, it's so difficult to meditate. Simply because when we are tired, the consciousness is dull and heavy. Or when we wake up from a very dense kind of sleep, or when we take a very heavy meal, it doesn't really require, it's nothing to do with morality. It's something to do with simply something very practical. Anything, there are activities which make the consciousness very restless. Again, it's very difficult to meditate at that point of time because one is driven by desire in various directions. So the essence in traditional yoga is to make the nature reasonably quiet and light. As long as it becomes light through certain kinds of discipline, it helps the soul to ascend. So far, so good. But as far as the action is concerned, the mold is still the same. At best, it is rajo-sattvic. There are some rare yogis, exceptions, who have broken through this magic fence even while the nature has not climbed to the sattvic level. And when they return back to nature for action, nature can behave very chaotically, and they are not understood by ordinary humanity because people wonder, because the traditional idea of yoga is saintliness, etc., etc. So, as long as the magic circle is rent, either by force, by will, by tapasya, by discipline, by surrender, or whatever means. And best is if one also works on nature to a point where nature at least arrives at a reasonable poise. When suddenly by force, as in certain yogas of Kundalini awakening, this circle is, this magic fence is broken. So nature can go into complete disarray. It doesn't mean that these people have not realized something. They have realized. But just that they have not, their nature is not yet ready to bear that kind of light. So they have an inner light, but outwardly the nature is in a chaos. So this is not a good condition to be in. But they achieve the purpose, and that purpose is basically to realize the divine or realize the highest consciousness or the highest self. But in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, we have something else. And that makes the difficulty far more acute and far more on a wider scale. And it is this, that the nature has to be transformed. Basically, it means that though the soul can ascend beyond the magic circle of humanity, but nature is not able to bear the pressure of something greater than human. The superhuman energies cannot play in the mind. The mind tends to crack. As Sri Aurobindo says, genius is an attempt of nature to exaggerate, to go beyond itself. So nature sometimes, like the great tsunami, goes beyond itself. Now when it goes beyond itself, it shatters the vessel. And often we have a good term for geniuses, that they are crackpots. Because actually the pot has cracked, literally cracked. So it happens because the mind cannot contain these energies. There are examples, and mother used to say, do not pull, because otherwise the mind can actually break, the Aadhar can break down. Similarly, the same thing is true of the vital. It is not able to receive and contain the higher power, because the moment it comes down, the vital, if it is not purified, it can start possessing it and think it is my own power. It starts laying an egoistic claim to it. And a person who was beautifully progressing as an instrument of the divine suddenly takes a titanic turn. This happens in this yoga, and it's difficult to understand why this can happen. And the reason is that if nature is not purified, and suddenly great powers begin to enter into the vital, it's quite possible that a person begins to feel that, well, it is me, these powers are mine, and that can start the breakdown at the vital. And instead of taking a godlike turn, one can take a turn towards the titanic nature. Similarly with the physical, and we have been reading last two weeks, that matter is of course the densest point of resistance. So in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, we often hear these terms, resistance, obstacles, the obstinate resistances, the difficulties which are offered by each part. Now each part offers its unique difficulty because they have to be prepared for the light, the power, the wideness, the peace, the sweetness, the delight, the force, the truth of the divine to descend and express through this part. And each part has to be worked upon, because if one part is worked upon, the other part is not worked upon, or the other part is not ready, then it can create again a kind of imbalance leading to various kinds of problems. So a great balance is required in this yoga. Mother gives this example that if a family is going and the father is going very fast, and like I always give this example of old time Indian families where the husband is going very far and the wife is lingering behind with one child in hand and two children are in between and the third one is still behind. This can create a kind of problem in this yoga, because it will lead to imbalances. So every part has to be taken together and offered to the divine. It makes the difficulty even more difficult. There has to be balance, harmony, everything has to be taken up and offered. Now, what way the working has to go on, she says, the mother makes it very clear, the mind cannot work upon the different layers. It's just not possible. So they have to be offered, surrendered, and the divine has to work upon these layers one after another. And that is how this yoga proceeds. So last 2 weeks, we have read about the obstinate difficulty in matter. And with regard to matter, all that is required is aspire and endure, aspire and endure, aspire and endure with faith. This is the mantra. And she says that calling the name, the mantra, that itself is a big help as far as material transformation is concerned. Then with regard to the vital, especially the vital nervous envelope, which becomes very sensitive because of the acute kind of egoism that develops when around the around matter, the vital energies begin to play, it appropriates them, it absorbs them like a black hole, and that becomes, that raises the sensitivity to a great extent, and that brings a lot of suffering sometimes. So the solution for that is impersonality, selflessness. The more we do things as a consecration to the divine, the more we offer, the less we think of ourselves, the less we do for our own sake, but for the sake of the divine or for a greater ideal. So that vital sensitivity begins to change. It becomes a fine-tuned instrument. So same way, we have the great resistance also in the mind. And we will read something about that from the mother's works. And this is in the context of several places Sri Aurobindo and the mother have spoken of the various kinds of difficulties at each level and how they have to be tackled. Now, in 1958, November, the mother, while she was looking at all the children means includes all of us, because for her we are all children, so in the class, and she would tell them to ask questions, but nobody had any questions. And she felt that they are so unconscious, so unconscious. So she wanted to know why they are so unconscious. They means all of us. Why humanity is so unconscious? It seems to have no interest. Nothing, it doesn't absorb anything. It's like pouring water on a pot which is turned upside down. So to know what it is, she entered into the, she doesn't use the word consciousness, she said into the unconsciousness of these people. And she went down and down and down, and she started experiencing that she was entering a black hole cut off from light, and they were jagged edges, and it was stifling, and it was as if, you know, you're falling into a crevice, very narrow crevice, but with jagged edges all around, so it hurts you here and there. And she enters, and then she has this thought that, where is the end of this? And then suddenly she strikes upon a vast spring which cast her up. And she describes this beautifully in the message, which I think was 1959. At the very bottom of the inconscience, most hard and rigid and narrow and stifling, I struck upon an almighty spring that cast me up forthwith into a formless, limitless, vast generator of all creation. This was the original message. Then she corrected it, which was vibrating with the seeds of a new world, because she found that it is there, that the supermind is hidden, but it is covered with layers and layers of the mind, which has formulated everything, systematized everything, concretized everything. Everything is known by the mind. This path, that path, this has to be done this way, this has to be done that way. And she says this is a very big obstacle, because the mind has precisely mapped out everything. And then she says that when I saw all these human efforts, all these systems of yoga, all these ways human beings have devised to approach the divine, all these tremendous efforts, she says, from that vast consciousness, you feel, oh, it is so childlike. It is so childlike. Though each is a valid path, a big path in its own right. So that's because the mind has a tendency to cut everything into very precise things. Then the mother comments on this particular vision of hers, this experience. This vision of the inconscient, it was the mental inconscient, because the starting point was mental. The starting point was, what is there in the mental unconsciousness of these people who have no questions, who are not seeking, who are not interested in anything. They come, they sit, and they go away unchanged as ever. So the starting point was mental. And what she finds there is special inconscient, rigid, hard, resistance, with all that the mind has brought into our consciousness. But it was far worse than a purely material inconscient. So inconscient is something fluid. Below it is the supermind expressing. Inconscient has done wonders. Actually, up till now, evolution has been done purely by the divine consciousness emerging through the inconscient. And we can see how beautifully creation has proceeded. Despite all the chaos, accident, it has really emerged in a wonderful way. But the moment the mind comes, it begins to create problems. All this mentalized inconscient, as it were, all this rigidity, this hardness, this narrowness, this fixity, a fixity comes from the presence of the mind in creation, because the mind has to deal with either or. For the mind, it has to be either this or that. Mind cannot function in any other way. Even when it takes two things together, it must compare and contrast. There is no other way that the mind can function. When the mind was not manifested, the inconscient was not like that. It was formless and had the plasticity. That plasticity is now gone. It is a terrible image of the mind. It has made the inconscient aggressive. That aggressiveness is because of the narrow edges. You know, when two human beings talk, how they snap. This snapping is a sign of, when one snaps, it means that aggressive part is coming out. Suddenly, it's like a rough edge. And of course, time to time, it comes out in every human being. But in some human beings, it's a way of life. So the moment you talk to them, they will snap. It's like a rough edge. And that's because the mind has created that kind of, those rough edges. Yes, it was not an original inconscient. With all that the mind has brought in the way of opposition, of resistance, hardness, rigidity. Because the starting point precisely was to look into the mental unconsciousness of these people. Well, the mental inconscient refuses to change, which is not true of the other one. The other one is nothing. It doesn't exist. It is not organized. Whereas this one is an organized inconscient, organized by a beginning mental influence, 100 times worse. This is something very interesting. Normally we feel that people who are extremely organized in their mind, everything is clear cut, cut and dried into a fixed formula. Everything is, there is no, what we normally understand by consistency in a very crude way. So they are very developed. The mother says that this very development becomes a problem. Precisely because of this, they lack the plasticity. And because of this lack of plasticity, it is far more difficult to change such people. This experience I had this time is of the inconscient that has undergone the influence of the mind in creation. It has become a far greater obstacle than before. That's where we are. And this almighty spring is the perfect image of what is happening, what must happen, what will happen. For everyone, suddenly one is cast forth into the vast. So it's very interesting. The experience will be like the whole mental image, the mental world. It will crush humanity through a narrow passage. She comments on this later on, that humanity is going through that. It's like the pupa of the butterfly, constricting, and suddenly something burst forth into the splendor of the vastness. So this is what is going to happen with the mind. It will go through a very stifling, narrow passage, rigid, hard, and suddenly something will give way and it will emerge into a vastness. And she gives the assurance that this is what must happen, what will happen. And then something very interesting. It was represented by a kind of image in which I was as vast as the universe. And each way of approaching the divine was like a tiny image. And my impression was this: why do people always limit themselves? Why do people always limit themselves? Narrow. They understand only when it is narrow. So the mind has this tendency to limit everything. It cannot understand other than limiting things, because it's easy to handle. Shubhendu speaks of it, and it's true in all of our life that supposing we have a very big palace to take care of. So most people will say it's very nice, but how to handle it? So they prefer a smaller room because it's much easier to handle, because one can work there, one can clean it, one can, you know, it's much easier to arrange. But if it's a palace, it's very difficult to arrange it. Always something will be, not attended. So humanity has a tendency to make things narrow because it's easy to handle. So she says, why do people always limit themselves? Narrow, narrow, narrow. They understand only when it is narrow. So one must say, divine is this or that. The moment you say, divine can be all this and much more. In 1956, January, her first talk, she says, if you want, she takes up from Sri Aurobindo's Synthesis of Yoga, where she says, if you want to undertake integral yoga, you must start with an integral conception of the divine. This in the synthesis. So the disciple asks, what is this integral conception of the divine? So the mother explains beautifully. He says, all of us have an image of what the divine is, and that image is based on what suits us. So everybody forms an image of the divine. This is only a practical necessity. One starts with that. But if one remains stuck with that, then one cannot proceed beyond a point, because beyond a point, one has to go beyond every image that the mind has constructed. So the method is to keep on enlarging. And then she says, a point comes when you just cannot judge or know what is divine and what is not divine. And then she says, yet for action you need to narrow down. But in terms of knowledge, it is become something vast. So it's an integral conception of the divine with which we have to start. So she says, take all within you, and then you will begin to understand. You will begin. So just to begin things, the yoga of transformation, everything is taken and offered. Like the Noah's Ark, or in our own mythology, King Satyavrat takes everything in the big boat and takes it, because everything is part of creation and everything has to undergo a transformation. But of course, she's not saying that take all means continue with the same old story. Take it and offer it and transform it. But when we only work with the mind, when the mind disciplines everything and puts everything into a rigid and narrow mold, then what happens? It is likely that the greatest resistance will be in the most conscious beings due to a lack of mental receptivity. Now, these conscious beings are those who are very conscious in the mind. So they have elaborate theories. They can write very complicated books with great mathematical equations. They perform very well in all kinds of examinations, PhD, 3 times MA and whatnot. But this type of a humanity will offer the greatest resistance. Due to mind itself, which wants things to continue according to its own mode of ignorance. So such a mind will want everything to be cast into its own mold. So people who are very organized are the most difficult to change. Just like the most developed monkey was not the one who changed into humanity. It was the monkey which was a little less than that. So it was always feeling, oh my God, I am not there, I am not here. So it had the urge to change. And the most developed monkey felt, I am the king of the jungle. At least that's what monkey thought. We say lion is the king of the jungle, but that's written in our books. But the monkey thinks, I am very clever. So in cleverness, I am clever than the lion. I am the king of the jungle. And the monkey which feels, I am the king of the jungle, I can know everything, it has no will to change. So in humanity, even later on, mother says, there are human beings who believe, simply because their mind is very, very developed, that they are extremely superior. And this superiority, feeling of superiority, closes the door to progress. Instead of really making them wide open, they think their mind can know everything, can judge everything, can theorize everything, and therefore they become closed. So-called inert matter is much more easily responsive, much more. It does not resist. And I am convinced that among plants, for example, or among animals, the response will be much quicker than among men. So the cat responded so beautifully that it would go into trance and could take a leap across many births. The animals, even the donkey would respond when they would pray to mother, then suddenly the donkey would run and come first in the race. But a human being, when it prays, it will doubt. I am praying, but is the mother really listening? Can I really, I am not so strong, other people are so good, how can I really run this race? 100 thoughts will come into the head and spoil everything. But donkey is very good because it doesn't have brains. So if we were a little closer to that, probably we have a greater hope. So So she says, it will be more difficult to act upon a very organized mind. Beings who live in an entirely crystallized, organized mental consciousness are as hard as stone. So there are people who for every word will find a very precise meaning. They are precise to a default. And if you know, Shobhinda is written like this and there is a comma here and then this here, and the mind is playing with things. Extremely organized. But for that very reason, very, very difficult to change. According to my experience, what is unconscious will subtly follow more easily. And then she gives the experience. It was a delight to see the water from the tap, the mouthwash in the bottle, the glass, the sponge, it all had such an air of joy and consent. This is an experience she describes, which is, of course, in a cryptic way given in the Ish Upanishad, where everything is seen as the divine. So she tells the disciple that, you know, the other morning when I got up, everything was so luminous, sparkling with delight. And the mouthwash, it was full of delight. And the paste was full of delight. The soap was full of delight. Everything was full of delight. So she says, it was responding, it was absorbing and responding to that light. There is much less ego. You see, it is not a conscious ego. The ego becomes more and more conscious and resistant as the being develops. So the more developed the being mentally, the more egoistic he is, and he thinks this extremely individualized becomes a big problem. Very primitive, very simple beings, little children will respond first because they don't have an organized ego. There's a very interesting story about, one of those stories which I have heard, that when a couple were coming to Pondicherry and they had a servant who was working with them, and they told the servant that we are going to Pondicherry, just take care of everything and look after the house. So they came to Pondicherry and they went back after whatever 15 days or something. So they asked him, everything is okay? He said, yes, yes, it had to be. He said, why, what happened? Oh, there was this Babaji. He was coming every day and asking me everything is okay. He would sit on the sofa. I would give him a glass of water. He, referring to Shurbindo, he said, how can he come? He said, yes, he was coming and inquiring every day. Now, you know, they were completely flabbergasted that we have traveled all the way to Pondicherry. We stayed there for 15 days. We did not have darshan of Shurabindo. And here is this servant who has just lived here. And he could respond so well that every day he is having the darshan of Shurabindo. And this man then later on, of course, the story continued that he went to his village, and there in village he started, you know, offering, people started connecting to Shurabindo and the mother by offering a flower. That mother can get happy just by offering a flower. I'm not talking of Karma Yogi here, but this is a village in Jharkhand, and how the whole movement developed in that particular village, because people responded in a very simple way. They didn't have a complicated mind that Shurabindo left his body on 9th December 1950. How he can manifest now? This question was not there. It was as simple and as natural and as easy as anything. Again, we keep asking questions about transformation. Will it be? Will it not be? There's another very interesting story where someone gave a talk and there was a seminar on evolution and transformation. So there were a lot of questions and question answers, back and forth, quotations, this Herbert Spencer and this logic, that logic. At the end of the whole thing, the gatekeeper who had to close the gate, he tells the speaker, you know, I don't know why these people found it so difficult to understand. It is such a simple thing you were speaking. Obviously, it is true that transformation will be. So he said, why? How do you say that? He said, every day I go to my pond and I see that, you know, a lotus blooms there. So if out of mud, lotus can come, why can't out of human being something godlike can come? Very simple logic. But look at how the intuition has worked and known things. So she says, such beings will respond first, because they don't have an organized ego. I'll read this part again. Very primitive, very simple beings, little children will respond first because they don't have an organized ego. I remember when people from Odisha came to the ashram, the mother was very happy. She made a remark. She said, I'm very happy to meet people from Odisha. They are so simple and so devoted. They are so simple and they are so devoted. These are her remarks. She was very happy when suddenly people from Odisha came, and she said that they have brought bhakti into this atmosphere. In the early years, Shobindo said, when question was asked, why don't people progress here so fast as in other ashrams? So Shobindo gave, there are many reasons, but one reason is that there is a abhav of bhakti. Bhakti is missing here. People have too many doubts. But in other ashrams, people trust. Master has said, we have to practice it and we will blossom. But here people ask 100 questions. So that's one reason why it doesn't progress. But these big people, people who have worked on themselves, who have mastered themselves, who are organized, who have an ego made of steel, it will be difficult for them. Very strange. Strange are the ways of the Lord. Perhaps that's what is meant in the Bible. It is the weak and the meek who shall inherit the earth. The Bible speaks of the devotee as a lamb. And that Christ, the divine incarnate, is the shepherd. So this is a very beautiful image. What does the lamb do? Bleat and follows the path. Wherever the master takes, it follows. But a lion will not do that. Elephant, very difficult to master. So she says, people who have mastered themselves. Oh, I have mastered this part in my nature, that part in my nature. I don't eat this food. I don't eat that food. I don't go here. I don't go there. I am so conscious, so vigilant, so mastered. So she says, it's very difficult to change them. So, but these big people, people who have mastered themselves, who are organized, who have an ego made of steel, it will be difficult for them. Unless, now here there is a hope for everybody, unless they go beyond all this and have enough spiritual knowledge to be able to make the ego surrender, in which case the realization will naturally be much greater. It will be more difficult to accomplish, but the result will be far more complete. So those who have entered into this groove have to go beyond. They have no other option. Because even if they try, they cannot get rid of this mental apparatus. This has to burst forth and they have to go beyond. They have no other choice. But there are those lucky ones who have not fully entered into this groove, and they can suddenly from that point of simplicity take off. But the difference will be those who have pierced through and gone through all this will be far more from the point of view of manifestation. The realization will be far greater. Whereas those who have not gone through this full mental evolution, which makes the whole process so complicated, the realization will be far simpler. So this is how she reveals to us.